Welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. KY's Whitehead. Folks, I am happy to be back. I want to first thank Anthony McCarthy for holding the chair for me on Friday when I was under the weather. What's interesting is that it has been a long weekend for all of us here in Baltimore City, not just for those of us like me who were convalescing, but in thinking about what is happening in our city. It is depressing when you think about it. We had 15 shootings this weekend. We've had 39 homicides in 30 days. I want to be clear, folks, that I checked the numbers last Wednesday. And when I checked, the numbers were at 216. And today, less than 5 days later, the Baltimore homicide numbers have risen to 233. We actually saw the numbers go up today because there were shootings this morning and one this afternoon. Think about that. Think about what is happening in this city. Now, we're waiting on a press conference from the Baltimore Police Department that's going to address the violence in this city. I don't know what they're going to say, because every time we have these press conferences, they offer out all these potential solutions and nothing ever changes. But when they go live, we will cover at least part of it. And we're going to talk about that more in this hour, because we got to figure out what's happening. How do we turn this tide? How do we end the wave? And it feels like we're having the same conversation. But I assure you that we're not, because one day the conversation is going to stick. One day we're going to see this tide turn. One day Baltimore City is going to become the place that we've all dreamed that it could become. Now, I want to note that this is an important day for a couple other reasons. On this day, back in 1962, after troops took control of the school, University of Mississippi, and of the area, James Meredith became the first African-American student to enroll at the segregated school, University of Mississippi. He was inspired by President John F. Kennedy, inspired by the inaugural address, people. Meredith decided to exercise his constitutional rights and apply to the University of Mississippi after he heard Kennedy speak. He wanted to put pressure on Kennedy's administration to enforce civil rights for African Americans. Now, what is interesting about James Meredith and why this is so important is because in 1966, James Meredith planned a solo 220-mile march against fear from Memphis, Tennessee to Jackson, Mississippi. He wanted to highlight continuing racism in the South and encourage voter registration after the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So his desire was to march the 202 miles by himself, to get people stirred up along the way, to get them registered to vote, to get the country, to make the country aware of what was happening and how even if the policies change, even if the laws change, the real battleground is still in the hearts and minds of people. Well, on the way, the second day he was out there, he was shot by a white gunman and he suffered numerous wounds. So after that, when he was taken to the hospital, the leaders of major organizations vowed to complete the march in his name. Now, while he was recovering, people from around the country joined this march. And when he finally rejoined them, when he became one of the main leaders joining the pack of people who were marching without him but in his name, he was leading an estimated 15,000 marchers. It became, at that time, one of the largest civil rights marches in Mississippi. And over that period of time, more than 4,000 African-American folks registered to vote. Now, his admission is regarded as a pivotal moment in the history of civil rights in the United States. He persisted through harassment, extreme isolation, to finally graduate on August 18, 1963, with a degree in political science. I want to play a little clip about James Meredith and Ole Miss.
James H. Meredith is formally enrolled at the University of Mississippi, ending one chapter in the federal government's efforts to desegregate the university. The town of Oxford is an armed camp, following riots that accompany the registration of the first Negro in the university's 118-year history. Much of this film record was destroyed when our cameraman, Gordon Yoder, was attacked, but he did salvage pictures of Governor Ross Barnett at the scene. The governor fought the court order long and bitterly before modifying his stand, saying Mississippi was overpowered by the federal government. President Kennedy appealed to the students and to the people of the state to comply peacefully with the law and bring the crisis to an end. Even as he talked, riots were breaking out in Oxford.
Americans are free and sure to disagree with the law, but not to disobey it. For in a government of laws and not of men, no man, however prominent or powerful, and no mob, however unruly or boisterous, is entitled to defy a court of law. If this country should ever reach the point where any man or group of men, by force or threat of force, could long deny the commands of our court and our Constitution, then no law would stand free from doubt.
That was just a little clip, and you heard President Kennedy at the end there talking about James Meredith and what happened when he went to integrate Ole Miss, University of Mississippi. Now, Charles Johnson asked about what were the current issues of this time. Think about 1965. They had just passed the Voting Rights Act, but at that time, African Americans were not registered in large numbers to vote. So what James Meredith wanted to do was bring attention to that and get African Americans registered to vote while he was taking what he had planned, his solo march, 220-mile march from Memphis, Tennessee to Jackson, Mississippi. Even though he was shot and wasn't able to do the full march, just the beginning and the end, over 4,000 African-Americans along the way got registered to vote, to be a part of the process. Folks, we talk often about the fact that all politics are local and every single vote counts. If you have not figured that out by now, then I do have some questions about what you're going to do come November. Today is also the one-year anniversary of the Las Vegas mass shooting. Remember that? When a gunman opened fire on a crowd of concertgoers at the Route 91 Harvest Music Fest on the Las Vegas Strip in Nevada. Now, Stephen Paddock of Mesquite, Nevada, fired more than 1,100 rounds from his suite on the 32nd floor of the nearby hotel. He killed 58 people. He left 851 people injured from gunfire and the resulting panic. The shooting occurred between 10:05 and 10:15 p.m., and about an hour later, Paddock was found dead in his room from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Now, his motive remains unknown, but this incident, the one that happened 1 year ago today, is the deadliest mass shooting committed by an individual in the United States. It reignited the debate about gun laws in the United States, with attention focused on bump fire stocks. Now, Paddock used to fire semi-automatic rifles at a rate similar to that of a fully automatic weapon and chose to use that on this day. Before we begin our conversation talking about Baltimore gun violence, I just want to play a clip about survivors marking this one-year anniversary since the Las Vegas shooting.
The final investigation report, issued in August, did not determine a motive, with the sheriff calling the shooter an unremarkable man with mental health issues.
We just see this, sadly, this repetitive sickness that's out there.
Early bipartisan calls for stricter regulations, including a federal ban on bump stocks, have quieted, despite bills in the House and Senate and promises from President Trump in the wake of a school shooting in Parkland, Florida, 4 months later.
We can do that with an executive order. I'm going to write the bump stock, essentially write it out.
10 states have passed bump stock bans and, in some cases, additional measures aimed at preventing future tragedies.
As we talk about what happened last year in Las Vegas and what hasn't happened since then, it is making me seriously reflect on what is happening in Baltimore City at this moment. We are at a moment where we must address and confront the issues surrounding gun control. It is a crisis moment, people. Let's just do the numbers. At this time, the UK has about 65 million people. The United States has about 330 million. The UK has approximately 50 to 60 gun homicides per year, and in the US, approximately 11,500. We have five times the population and 210 times the gun murders. Here in Baltimore City, where we have about 620,000 people or so far this year, we're at 233 homicides. When do we decide as citizens, as human beings, that enough is enough and that we have the right to be safe and to not live in fear? We shouldn't have to worry about someone walking into a church and shooting us while we're praying. We shouldn't have to worry about someone shooting us when we're at McDonald's. We shouldn't have to worry with someone sticking a gun out of a hotel window and shooting us while we're at a music concert. We also should not have to worry that if we cut somebody off on the road over on 695 at the Harford County exit, we shouldn't have to worry that someone's going to then pull a gun out and shoot us as we're driving along the road. Last year, White House spokeswoman Sarah Huckabee Sanders said it was too soon to begin a debate on gun control. That debate has not happened. My question to her and to you, when will be the right time? If we wait for the right time, people, instead of making this time to be the right time, then we will soon find ourselves back at this moment again, where we're grieving, where we're horrified, and we're asking questions about what we can do to deal with gun violence right here in Baltimore City. 15 shootings in one weekend. We've had a very rough couple of days. It is now at a point, and I've said this before, and I feel like I'm repeating myself. And I wonder, too, by calling it a crisis moment, are people now starting to say to themselves, Dr. K, if every moment is a crisis moment, then none of the moments are crisis moments. But I think there's something different here. 39 homicides in 30 days, 15 shootings in one weekend, as we come into a time we're thinking about the deadliest mass shooting committed by an individual to happen in the United States, happened on this day last year. What has been happening in Baltimore City over the last 30 days? What has been happening in Baltimore City over the weekend? We're back talking about gun control again. Baltimore police are investigating, of course, because we do a lot of investigations here, even though we don't do a lot of closing of the crimes. We're going to go and try to get some comments very quickly. We want to go to that press conference with Baltimore Police Department. They're talking about the violence. Why don't we go to that conference? And then, John, hold on. We're going to talk on the other side. Then we're going to open up the phones to you.
And at that point, and this is the video. Again, just giving you guys a warning and just as a reminder, there's a 30-second buffer once the camera is activated that doesn't have any sound. Once the sound is activated, you start to hear the shooting pretty much immediately. And for purposes of news desk, you will email this out at the appropriate time.
So we're having a little problem with the audio, but once we get the audio up and rolling, we will check in with the Baltimore Police Department to get an update from them about what is happening. I mean, I'm sure you're concerned. I'm concerned. I want to know what is happening and what Baltimore City is planning to do about what's happening in our city. It is not safe right now. 15 shootings in one weekend, what, 38, 39 homicides or so in 30 days? Yeah, it's not safe right now. We got to figure out what they're planning to do and how they're planning to turn this city around. I know it's going to sound like a lot of talking. I know it's going to sound like a lot of hot wind. I know it's going to sound like the same solutions again, but maybe this time the city has finally stumbled upon a plan that will turn this around. They're not listening to us. So if they're not listening to us and they have all these experts, then maybe one of the experts at the table can tell us what we can do to stop this rain of gun violence and terror that the city is dealing with right at this moment. 15 shootings in one weekend, 39 homicides in 30 days. That is the reality of what it means to live in Baltimore City at this moment. 410-319-8888. Let's talk about it today. We have John on the phone from Ellicott City. John, how are you?
Welcome back, Dr. K.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, we miss you. I'm going to be brief, but this situation is very complex, and it's not going to be solved by, you know, a couple of people talking, coming with a plan.
Yes.
When you look at it, it's not just Baltimore. it's worldwide. When you look at the family structure of the perpetrators, the family structure, income level, level of education, they have certain commonalities. Most of them come, the family structure, single female, single head of household, income level, at most of them at below the poverty level, level of education, not high school graduates. They're not high school graduates, and you go to any slum anywhere, and until conditions are changed, and do you know that we have about 45,000 people a year who just take their lives? You know,
yeah.
They're so desperate. So until changes, and it's not just a matter of who the mayor is or who anybody is, unless that dynamic is changed, and it's going to be, it's very difficult to attract capital investment in low-income areas.
Right.
And those things are very complex. So if anybody expects any quick solution or they can couple marches, and at the federal level, they have cut back on funding support to cities. Whatever support they make, it goes directly to the and the tax base is not, it's a weak tax base, the tax base as a city. And in Detroit, they are making more progress up there in terms of strengthening that tax base.
Right.
And I'm going to get off the air. But
no, but you know what, John, before you go, because I do have a question for you before you go.
Mm-hmm.
By strengthening the tax base, and you were talking about using Detroit as an example, do you think if we just were to strengthen our tax base here in Baltimore City, do you think that will turn back this wave of violence?
Well, you'll find that crimes, many of the crimes, look at who's doing the shooting and look at mostly the victim of shootings. Most of the people committing crimes are in the drug trade. Most
yes.
of the people who are shot. Now, I'm not saying all.
Right,
of
but most. I get
but
you.
But most.
Right.
And then when you separate out the crimes of passion, when someone gets upset at somebody, you know, or domestic issues, and they kill somebody. But for the most part, that hasn't changed. And to change that is, and I hear people call your show constantly, they got the money now. I saw something in the paper the other night that Baltimore has about $3 billion in maintenance repairs, a backlog.
Right.
And the tax base, and I know people argue against gentrification, but that helps to strengthen the tax base. But the issue is, what do you do to people who are displaced?
Right. And gentrification, even though the people have a lot of feelings about that, and I want people to call 410-319-8888. Well, gentrification, is that what we need to save Baltimore City? I believe, John, and you've said this before, the path that we're on now, it's not leading us towards any solutions. The direction we're moving now seems to be marching us farther down the road towards more violence, more crimes, more drugs, and more guns. I mean, I think it's been a year now. It's been a year, and we've been talking about the same thing on this show.
How do you attract
yes.
private capital investment in an area in certain parts of the
yes.
city when you have a low level of income? I mean, this not income, education. This society is becoming more and more technological driven.
Right.
And I would not want to be a mayor of any big city.
Not right now. Now it's too difficult.
Not now.
No, it's very difficult.
Not now.
I mean, because right now you need some new world solutions now, because
and
what
you
have
to do a lot of praying too.
Yes.
Okay,
thank you so
thank
much,
you.
John. I appreciate you calling. Folks, 410-319-8888. You know, I talked to John, and though I'm chuckling a bit, my heart is heavy. I feel like we keep having the same conversation. I am not willing to give up on Baltimore City. I'm not. I'm not willing to move out of Baltimore City. I'm not willing to hide myself away somewhere where we can just be away from this issue. No, I'm trying to roll up my sleeves and stay in the game and wrestle through this. 39 homicides in 30 days, 15 shootings in one weekend. That's the reality of what it means to live in Baltimore City at this moment. How do we craft the new narrative? How do we craft the new reality? 410-319-8888. I have Candace on the phone. Candace is a new caller. Welcome to the family, Candace.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so glad you called.
Yes, I was listening, and I always listen to you, but I'm in education. I've been in education for 14 years now, and coming from the education background, I'm looking at, like, the mental health of people in general. It's just it's poor mental health for someone to just kill somebody because of anything. It's something mental that's going on that we're not reaching. And we've taken a lot from the after-school programs to the after-school centers. We're taking them out of the community where a lot of that treatment, not necessarily mental health, but a lot of that compassion and love was given. And we've taken that away. And during that time that we take another way, we look at the children that grew up in that time period. Those are the ones that's doing the killing now. We have to go back to where the issue started and start back from there. You know what I mean? I think that mental health is a big thing. We can half of the killings are caused because people don't know how to get sick. They don't know how to fix their issues.
No, they don't. No, they don't. Except somehow or another, violence seems to be the answer. Violence seems to be that's the only way. If you're talking 15 shootings in one weekend, violence is an answer for something for some people.
Right.
Oh, this is a concern. Because we don't know, where do we go from here, Candace? Like, as someone, as an educator for the last 14 years, what is one solution that you think that we can implement to turn this tide?
I think to the classroom, we have to go back to helping children. We have to help, and when the children, we help the family. We used to be where, you know, if the family was in need, it was a lot of priority to support not only the children, but attached to the children are the parents. We forget that, and now we're back to, we're going to just do the bare minimum. Baltimore City Schools, they say they do a lot, but there is a lot that's lacking. And if we go back to the basics of supporting everybody raising children, like it wasn't just the teacher or the grandparents. It was everybody.
Right.
And we got to go back to that. We're missing the basic stuff to support our families. And this is our future, and we want our future to be out of control and reckless and not really having guidelines. I work in...
I'm going to have to stop you there, Candace. I'm so sorry. We have to take a hard break here. Folks, when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation. John, Joey, Smitty, Kim, do not hang up. I'll come to you right after the break. Baltimore City, 39 homicides in 30 days, 15 shootings this weekend alone. Let's talk about it. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. According to gunviolencearchive.org, in 2018, there were a total of 43,419 shootings nationwide, over 11,014 deaths, 271 mass shooting victims, 223 officers shot or killed, and counting. This weekend alone here in Baltimore City, I want you to think about that. That was a total number for last year. This weekend alone, we had 15 shootings in one weekend. And at this point in the last 30 days, we've had 39 shootings, killings, homicide, 39 in 30 days. We have talked about solutions. We have talked about trying to turn this tide. Folks, that's the reality right now of what it means to live in Baltimore City. It is the wild, wild west at this point. 15 shootings in one weekend, 39 homicides in 30 days. That's the wild west. There is no law. There is no sheriff in town. We're just doing whatever we want whenever we feel like it. Somebody cuts me off over here on 695 at the Hartford Road exit, no problem. I'll take out my gun and shoot them because that's how we're rolling now. Last week, two elementary middle school students took guns to school. One of them went off in the bathroom. We're going to go to that press conference so maybe we can hear some solutions to what's happening right now in Baltimore City.
37 people killed in September, almost half of them 17 last week. Are these random or targeted?
We believe that a few of these, and I'm not going to go into the specific ones, are targeted. We have traction in a couple of these cases that we've let's just say we've got some encouraging leads.
Do you have a ballpark figure in terms of how many?
I'm going to let you might the detectives.
Might be targeted, might be random. I think it would give the community some sense of.
So we've had, out of those incidents, we've had some that were, like the commissioner said, were random. We've had some that are robbery-based as well. As well as some incidents, like the incident that we had downtown, mm-hmm. that was purely a dispute. So I would say that it was threefold: dispute, robbery, and also target.
And at least two of these instances, it was domestic violence related.
The gentleman who was killed in Federal Hill, Mr. Tim Marconi. There was somebody reposted it. It was almost a year to the day that he was attacked in the same area in Federal Hill. Is that just coincidence, or is there any possibility that he may have been a target?
At this point, we think that's coincidental.
Will every district that's seen a homicide see additional officers, or are they being concentrated in certain districts?
Every district will see additional personnel. And as I said before, we've suspended leave for the next few days. This is not going to be easy. I mean, this situation didn't get started overnight. It's not going to be fixed overnight. But as we make the adjustments, again, it's not going to be easy. We've suspended leave. We've scrubbed this building for personnel that could be on the street in uniform doing the job. So, which is why you see the numbers with respect to the number of people that we put out today.
Commissioner, to suspend leave, how many more officers would that put on the street?
It wouldn't exactly give you an exact number. What it does is says that whoever is not off cannot take off. So in order to give you an exact number, we had to go back and look at each person's role post about the whole age to actually give you an exact number. So
does that mean, so if you have vacation next week, but you're working today, that vacation next week is suspended?
No, it's just for the next 3 days in the agency. So for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, yeah. No one will be allowed to take off unless it's an emergency situation with family members as such.
Aside from...
Just quickly. So today in the patrol citywide, we have 399 of those officers of the 527 of the patrol. The remaining officers are administrative and detectives and others that are working in the patrol function today.
Commissioner,
aside from increased patrol, will there be any other initiatives, community walks like there is tonight? Is that going to happen in any other district?
Yeah, so we are going to be doing a walk tonight in the Southern District, but we're also leveraging our federal partnerships. We're asking them to sort of canvas their cases to see what they can bring to the table in terms of intel that we could use to go out and identify, particularly if there are connections to any of these shootings, and also identify the likelihood of retribution and how we might try and get in front of that. You know, it's important to underscore that, you can't control human behavior at the end of the day. You can try and get in front of actions that somebody might take, but in terms of dictating human behavior, it's almost impossible. It's our job to look at the data and try to get ahead of those actions. If somebody is intent on pulling the trigger against somebody else, it's probably going to happen at some point. But the deployments that we're doing are meant to try to sort of intercede in that in some way or disrupt what might be going on, particularly in terms of retaliation.
What do you say to the public, the folks who want to come and enjoy Baltimore? How do they proceed? You know, they're afraid to go to Federal Hill, they're afraid in their own, whether it's Penn and North or whatever, that things can just break out at any moment. How do you expect citizens to run their lives and at the same time protect themselves?
Lisa's a great point. The thing that I can guarantee is that we're going to have the presence out there. And I want folks to understand that this most recent deployment is meant to do that. It's meant to show a presence, also serve as a deterrent. But this goes to a much systemic issue that we're having, and that's that we just simply don't have enough police. That's the bottom line. And for all the adjustments that we make, this is going to cost us overtime. It's going to be, you know, an expensive uplift for us, but we have to do it. We've got to do something. We just can't sit back on our hands and let this thing play out. We have to try and get in front of it.
Let me bring up what Councilman Brandon Scott said. He said, why not reroute, you know, instead of people calling, oh, my tire slashed, this, that, and the other, people call 911, you have to send someone out. How do you address that? Maybe that could cut down on some things?
Yeah, so one of the things that we're doing is we just beefed up our what's called our TRU, our telephone reporting unit. So citizens will be able to not only call into the telephone reporting unit, an officer will not show up. Right, these will be for things that aren't part one, part two crimes. These will be for minor things like you said, you can also make a report on your phone. If you download the BPD app, you can follow.
Folks, that was Commissioner Gary Tuggle at a press conference talking about what the Baltimore Police Department planned to do to respond to the wave of violence that we're seeing now. I am serious when I'm calling it the Wild, Wild West. 39 homicides in 30 days, 15 shootings in one weekend. That's the reality of what it means to live in Baltimore City right now. I heard Lisa Robinson from WBAL ask a question. How are citizens supposed to run their lives and protect themselves? Because stuff can jump off, pop off, get started at any moment. Like, this is what we're talking about now. So let's go through what they plan to do, and I'm going to get back to your calls, 410-319-8888. So according to Gary Tuggle, every district will now see additional officers. And what we're going to do is have increased patrols. He said for the next 3 days, anybody that has time off, that has been rescinded. You cannot take off as a cop unless it's an emergency, because right now they're trying to get in front of the retaliation. They're also planning to do a walk tonight in the Southern District, a community walk. And third, they have asked their federal partners to provide them with intel and to identify the likelihood of retribution. Whether or not we're in the middle of seeing some type of big fallout, is it a gang war going on? No idea what's happening. Commissioner Tuggle said you can't control human behavior. All they're trying to do is disrupt this violence, intercede on what is happening. This is why I'm saying, folks, it is like there's no sheriff in town. It's like people are free to do whatever they want to do. 15 shootings in one stinking weekend, 39 in 30 days. Folks, the question is, with what is happening in this city, how do we turn the tide? Is it just getting more cops on the street? I just want to throw out that when we looked at the top wage earners from last year, the top wage earner was a police officer who made $150,000 in overtime. So I want to note, he said it's going to be expensive. So people getting shot, people getting killed, and it's going to cost us a bunch of money to try to fix this thing. Because something ain't working. 410-319-8888. I have John on the phone, a new caller from Gambrills. John, welcome to the family. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, Doctor?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling and holding on.
I believe that I have an answer to this whole problem.
Oh,
this
please.
Is nothing new.
Okay.
And I'm going to give it right now. It's not one solution that's going to take care of this. We had this same issue. I'm from D.C., and I was raised in a PG Prince George County, but I just moved to Baltimore about 8 months ago. And when I heard that on the news, I said, we're going to leave. I say, because these people in charge, I point to the leaders all the time. I'm also an ordained minister, and I point, or every time you see some trouble, you got to point to the leaders because they're the ones in charge. It's like a combination of things that need to happen, but it's to change. Okay, let me just back up a little bit. But D.C. had this same problem in the 1980s.
Yes.
It was the Wild, Wild West.
Yes.
And if you go there now, it is perfect.
Yes.
And it's not because that they always say it's gentrification. No, it's not that. Because that just now started taking place within the last 5 years. I'm not going to say just started taking place.
Right.
But that took place then. But they got that problem solved way back in 97, because I moved back from California in 97. And none of that kind of stuff was going on back in D.C. So a combination of things. Number one, we definitely need more policemen on the street.
Yes.
Not just, you know, in an office somewhere. We need them in the presence of Park Heights. I was driving through Park Heights because I'm new here. I was driving through Park Heights and it just turned dark. There was about 10 people who came out of there and I started flashing all type of signs. When I got to the stop sign, my windows were dark on my car. The guy said, and I wind down on my window and I said, no, man, I'm good. I don't want anything. I know they were trying to sell me drugs. He said, Shorty, you can't keep running up and down the street like this. He said, man, he said, I'm trying to tell you, we're going to file up on you. I said, wow. That right there, those are the kind of people that need to be locked up because of this crime. I'm just driving up down the street. I happen to come up on a wrong street and almost lose my life. And now we need to have police presence over there. If they don't know where it is, I can tell them where it is.
I like that. So increase police presence. Keep going, because I'm writing them down, John. Go ahead.
Police presence. And then we need to change these laws where I talk to, I you know how in Baltimore they got their own little Uber thing going on. So, you know, I picked up a couple people. These are females. And so, you know, I can tell one, you're doing what you're doing.
Right.
And she said, you know, really, I can't get a job. I said, what do you mean you can't get a job? I helped my wife get a job. She's six figures now. And I said, I can try to do the same thing for you.
Right.
And she said, I have a felony. I said, wow. That goes to show that these people are trying to change their life. They're trying to get into a better status. But because they've already done their time in jail, but because the felony that she has on her record, she can't get a job. I had another buddy. He drives tractor trailer. I advised him to drive tractor trailer because if you drive tractor trailer, they really don't care if you have a felony.
Right.
You know, because it's like your own business and stuff like that, you know, and you're still going to make some money. He was boo-hoo crying to me. He passed the test, and now he's driving and he's doing good.
Nice.
But that right there goes to show that he did this when he was in high school. I'm 52. He's 50. And so, you know, this is what's hindering him from what he did when he was like 18 or 19 years old. You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying.
And so,
change the law so that formerly incarcerated residents can get a job.
It's exactly.
Yes.
And so you need police presence. You need to change the law for these people who've gotten these bad records and stuff like that.
Right.
They've already done their time, and it's not nothing, you know, like not like murder or nothing like that.
I know what you mean. Right.
I don't think the people, the employers who are trying to hire you, they don't need to know that you went to jail because you used to sell marijuana.
Right.
Or that you used to sell, you know, coke.
Right. I agree.
Like that.
I agree. You got a third one for me, John?
Say again, I'm sorry.
You got a third one for me? Because I'm writing your solutions down.
Yes. And it's laws. We need tougher laws for them who have handguns. For those who have handguns, these laws can be. No, but you only have to do two. No, it should be a mandatory, I think, 7 years. Mandatory, no parole until you do 7 years.
7 years, no parole. If you get caught with a handgun, an illegal gun, 7 years.
A little bit.
All right. Thank you so much, John. I appreciate you calling. Folks are checking in from Facebook Live. AC Holland, the pastor, is saying, thank you. It's outrageous. Thanks for focusing on what's happening in our communities. Keith Snipes says, Baltimore is but a small part of the Wild West. America is the Wild West. Until we acknowledge this country's history of violence, particularly against black people, we will not solve the problem. Demonizing the victims of violence initiated by and perpetuated by white men is not going to solve the problem. Keith, I am agreeing with you, yet. Do we have any control on what's happening in our own community? I understand about what's happening. I know what the white man has done in this system. I know what's happening with the man as a whole. We started talking about this. I got all that. I'm just wondering, what can we do in our communities? 15 shootings in one weekend. 39 homicides in 30 days. Yes, we can talk about how violence is initiated by and perpetuated by white men. I got that. I'm also wondering, what can we do to get the hands out of our brothers as well? I'm just throwing that out there. Not a popular question, not a popular position, but folks, it's the Wild West here in Baltimore, and until we can actually admit that, it won't ever change. We have Smitty on the phone from West Baltimore. Smitty, how are you?
Dr. K, how you doing?
I'm doing well, sir.
Dr. K, the nature of my call was I heard you say you wasn't ready to get out of Baltimore, but I want to share this with you. I've been in Baltimore all my life, born and raised in the Sandtown area, but I am 71 years old. 1993, my son got killed in the street of Baltimore, okay? Homicide, never found the murderer because homicide is just as relaxed as they are today. My question to you is that when we see these conditions and they go year after year after year, where we see our people put into a condition where there's no change in the Sandtown area, there has been no new revitalization programs, there have been nothing. You tell the children, don't have sex, don't smoke, don't use drugs. You get all that in their mind, and then you turn around, you close up all the recreation, so they have nowhere to go to enjoy themselves. They have nothing to do. But my mother would say, an idle mind is the devil's workshop.
Yes, it is.
And we're creating a lot of idle minds with people not having any sense of direction. Now, you talked about the police department. That police department was built with corruption way back when.
You're right.
And today, who can we trust? Can the people trust? How can you have a police department that the guys say we need more police? Well, you had more police, and the crime rate still was high.
Right.
1993, you had a full
a ton of police officers. Yes.
And in 1993, people were getting killed on the streets like flies, okay?
Wow.
This condition ain't going to change with more police. How to change this condition is that political people who have let this city run down, and they have taxed all the people in this in Baltimore City, high water bills, high real estate taxes. When the politicians let these houses become to be vacant, that used to be the tax paying money to pay fire and police. They used to get it off of the tax that you pay on your home or you pay on a rental. Now they have sucked all the money out of the people, and they gave them less police protection, and it continued to go on. And then they put a bunch of nasty police in the community. Well, before you can solve a homicide, you got to have people who are willing to tell you what happened in their community.
Good.
But when you take those people and you turn them into the drug boys and say, this is the one who called me and told me what you said, and those people like, you had the Dawson family. Those people got burned out trying to curb violence in their community and where they live. See, we keep sugarcoating stuff. And
you know what? I'm with you.
We got these people who are knock on your door for a vote. But when it comes down to them doing their job, they do nothing. They can solve this overnight. Change the system. Let it be somebody white keep getting killed over and over and over and like that. And you will see a change in what happens.
Thank you so much, Smitty. I'm with you. I'm with you. No more sugarcoating. Thank you, Smitty. I am with you because sugarcoating doesn't save lives. Sugarcoating doesn't save our community. Sugarcoating doesn't stop our young brothers from killing each other. Remember, folks, I heard T.J. Smith say just last week that there are corners here in Baltimore City where young black men are killing each other at astounding rates. He said it last week. I saw it this weekend. Think about that. And by the way, I mistakenly call Interim Police Commissioner Gary Tuggle Commissioner Gary Tuggle. He is only the Interim Police Commissioner. Maybe if they bring in a new police commissioner, maybe we can clean house, because right now ain't no sheriff in town. And we've got to find a way to turn this thing around. We have Nurse Will on the phone from Baltimore. How are you, Nurse Will?
Hi, Doctor. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
You know, there's an old saying, drastic time calls for drastic measures.
Yes.
The simple fact of the matter is, and people may agree or disagree with me, Baltimore and all of the major urban cities in this country are in a state of genocide.
Mm.
And I've called them before and said it was government-sponsored genocide.
You did say that.
Yeah, and the question is, well, what do we do now? Well, we have the interim commissioner who just admitted that the police is ill-equipped to handle what's going on right
now.
Yes,
that's what he said.
And the last time we were in a situation like this was after Freddie Gray and the violence and all, but they brought in the federal troops, National Guard.
Yes, I remember that.
That's when the streets were at peace like nobody's business.
They locked this place down. It was a different place. I mean, it was actually, in some ways, there were some communities that were so locked down, though, Nurse Will, the people couldn't move. And then there were some communities where they didn't have anything. I mean, Mount Washington was fine. I mean, there were some communities that were moving on.
That's the case. I agree. But when you have a rat-infested community, you have to go in there and handle those rats and get it out. And unfortunately, you know, you may have just some poison in some areas that, you know, some collateral damage may occur where some rights may get stepped on.
Yeah.
But, you know, your first caller, John, was hitting several nails on the head. You know, who and why would someone put some money into some of these neighborhoods to reinvest? And,
you know, I
literally asked myself that question this morning driving through my old neighborhood. And it's amazing that in this town, with all these homes that are either boarded up, torn down, the liquor store still somehow remains.
And they are thriving. They are doing fine. I mean, I've driven through some of these neighborhoods. I've driven through Sandtown, Winchester at night. And I've seen those corner stores that we've talked about on this show. They are open for business. You go in there, ain't nothing on the shelf. I'm like, well, what in the world are you selling? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. What are you selling? But you're open for business. I mean, maybe the mayor hit on something when she said, hey, let's start by closing those.
Yeah. And they know I said that too. You know, we need to close these liquor stores.
Yeah.
But I honestly believe that our political hierarchy right now is ill-equipped to handle the problem that's occurring in Baltimore.
I agree.
At the least, we need to really start thinking about filing a federal and a state, but federal lawsuit to get the necessary funds, as John mentioned, $3 billion to change the structure.
Come
What's
on.
Going on?
Come on.
We're not going to get that on our own.
I mean, it was on the cover of the Baltimore Sun yesterday that the schools, I don't know if you saw that on the cover of the Baltimore Sun. They said, you know, don't even think about the AC, the school system, the pipes in the schools. Like the schools are actually falling apart.
Just like the home doctor, they need to be torn down and rebuilt as well.
Yeah. But this is what we're sending our kids, right? So what do we expect them to do?
What
we send them
expect?
To prison-like conditions all day. What do we expect? Thank you so much, Nurse Will. I appreciate you. We have Margaret on the phone. Margaret's a new call from Baltimore. Margaret, welcome to the family.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I grew up in East Baltimore, in Baltimore City, and we had recreation centers.
I remember
so
those.
All the kids had somewhere to go, and we played, and they had staff there who had good morals and values. And we only got chastised. We didn't only get chastised at home. We got chastised from other people in the neighborhood as well as people in the community center. The other thing I want to say is that I believe that mental health is a big thing, but we're overlooking it a lot. And I think that something should be taught in the school system relating to mental health and teaching our kids how to solve problems without hurting one another.
Conflict resolution. I'm with you, Margaret.
Right.
Conflict
right.
resolution.
And
thank you so much, Margaret. We have Donna on the phone. Donna's a new caller from downtown Baltimore. Donna, I'm going to try to get you in here before the break. Welcome to the family.
Oh, I'm not a new caller.
Oh, well welcome back, Donna.
Well, you know, I live in the downtown area between the stable communities and the public housing. And, you know, We had problems. We've had, you know, juveniles carjacking us and whatever. And what we did was we wanted to find out from a social perspective what's going on. And we figured it out that when you have kids who feel hopeless and they don't feel that there's any other solution to the poverty they live in, their problems with their own parents, and et cetera, they act out, you know, and their only way of getting heard is to act out.
Right.
And until the mayor and our city council ask our children, the teenagers, the elementary, the middle, and the high school kids, just ask them a blank, just ask them a question. What is going on for you? What is going on? We don't talk to these children. And it, until our mayor and them go down and start talking to these kids, I'm not talking about the kids saying where the drug dealers are. Ask them how they feel about what's going on and what they feel needs to be corrected.
I agree.
They'll tell you they want food, They want better
the
housing.
The same thing they've been talking about for years. Right,
right,
Donna? Come on.
Right. And the police department cannot solve the social problem.
No, they cannot. They are not social workers. They're not counselors. They're not priests.
Right.
They're not pastors. They're coming in to enforce the law. That's the branch they work for.
And they come in after everything, when the crime happens or after it happens.
Please.
We have to start from the beginning. We have to, I mean, and I went into, and I studied at Morgan too, in community planning because of what I saw 30 years ago growing up. So I went into the field and really understood what's going on. So when we had the carjackers, I had to bring the neighborhood association together. I said, let's look at it from a different perspective than, oh, I was carjacked. Let's turn it around and look at it from the carjackers, the kids and them. And we started getting a better understanding. So there are things that we need to do first. And I agree that our politicians who grew up in these neighborhoods are not doing what they're supposed to do.
No, they're not. Thank you so much. Folks, we're going to hold it here for just a moment. When we come back, Brother Derek's been holding. We'll come to you. Leon, Diane, Apache, Paul. Folks, I want to just tap on something Donna said about how our cops are not equipped to be counselors. They're not supposed to be. Counselors or priests or pastors, they're not supposed to be. Cops are there to enforce the law. I don't know who said this quote. I'm going to throw it out. When your only tool is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. When cops show up, they show up with a hammer and everything looks like a nail. Cops won't save our communities. We're going to talk about that when we come back. 410-319-8888. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And here's a quick update from MTA.
Good evening. Camden Station will be closed to light rail link riders October the 5th through March 31st to allow for construction of a new Camden Station facility. The Convention Center stop should be used instead. The Penn-Camden light rail link shuttle will operate between Penn Station and Mount Royal during this period. MARC riders will not be affected by this. Commuter information is available at mta.maryland.gov. Currently, no delays on the light rail link. Metro Sublink, however, is running with an 18-minute delay in both directions because of a disabled train. No issues on MTA commuter buses. For the MTA Transit Team, I'm Ken Berger on 88.9 FM WEAA, the voice of the community.